All right, y'all, welcome to the show. I am excited for today's show. There's a lot of stuff we're going to dive into, so right off the bat here, I'm going to cover for you what I sincerely believe might be the worst article I've ever read in my life. That's saying a lot. I've read a lot of doozies over the years. This one is definitely up there. So we'll leave with that in just a second. Spoiler, it's Jonathan Chait wrote the article. Then after that, we will get into, look, RFK's own staffers are kind of saying the quiet part out loud. They are saying, yeah, my goal is sort of to get Trump elected. Now, look, it's a different conversation about whether or not RFK feels that way. But certainly his staffers have very, very clear, specific thoughts on what they want to happen. Then later on, Tucker goes after Israel. We have Sam Harris is Sam Harrising again and makes some insane comments about Hamas versus Nazis. And then later on in the show, we got a little bit of Ben Shapiro embarrassing himself. And there's a new Biden ad that just dropped. And I got to be honest, I think it's the strongest ad that I've ever seen from him. So a lot of stuff to talk about. Everybody do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. If you're not subscribed, I don't know what you're doing with your life. It helps us out big time. It costs you absolutely nothing. Makes it so that we can hit that 10 million number eventually and get that nice, sexy-ass plaque, which I'll proceed to put behind me. So hook a brother up with that. And much love to everybody who supports this channel through Patreon, which the link is below, or tipping on YouTube. You guys make it work. I've never talked to an advertiser. I'm very proud of that, but I wouldn't be able to do that without you guys. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into it here. So I'm not kidding when I say one of the worst articles I've ever read in my life. So this is in New York Magazine. Here's the title. The left-wing authoritarian shutting down the Democratic Party. Liberals would justifiably freak out if the right was doing this to Biden. So we're going to go through a bunch of it. The gist of it is very clear. All of these pro-Palestine protesters who are going after the Democrats at public events, how dare they? They're so wrong. All right, so here's what Chait says. Imagine a world in which Congressman Jamie Raskin attempts to deliver a speech on democracy, autocracy, and the threat to reason in the 21st century, and is unable to deliver his remarks because Trump supporters drown him out, and authorities justify the disruption as an exercise in democracy. Democrats attempting to raise money for the opposition are surrounded on the street by Trumpists shouting, "Fuck Joe Biden," and abusing them with racial epithets. These are the kind of scenes that come to mind when we imagine the authoritarian culture of a second Trump term. They are also events that have not only occurred, but have grown commonplace. The pattern of behavior is illiberal and dangerous. The twist, of course, is that the mob shutting down the opposition to Trump are not Trump supporters, or at least not right-wing Trump supporters. Pro-Palestinian activists have set out to disrupt Democratic Party officials from speaking and raising funds to defeat Trump. A New York Times story recently drew some attention to the political problem this creates for Democrats. Indeed, some of the protesters are trying to defeat Biden, ergo to elect Trump, to teach the Democrats a lesson, and others are merely trying to force the Democrats to move left before the election. Because Democrats perceive some of the protesters as potential Biden voters, they have soft-pedaled their criticism of their tactics. The handful of critics have focused on the political ramifications of the protest movement. Quote, if you are now organizing people to walk away from supporting the president, then you are now de facto supporting and helping Trump, Senator John Fetterman told the Times. But the problem is not one of mere efficacy. Drowning out speakers and disrupting exercises in politics, regardless of its cause or the target, is wrong on principle. I'm not referring to tactics like holding protest marches, speeches, social media posts, organizing uncommitted votes in the Democratic primary, or other exercises of First Amendment rights. I'm specifically referring to a campaign to shut down speakers who oppose, or even in many cases simply decline to endorse, the movement's agenda. Usually it means interrupting speeches with screaming insults until the protesters are dragged out of the room, which has become the norm at Biden campaign events. At events with sub-presidential levels of security, protesters often succeed in overwhelming the event and its security and shutting down the speech or event entirely, sometimes employing violence. I'd place in the same category aggressive personal harassment campaigns like gathering outside somebody's home at 3 o'clock in the morning with bullhorns shouting, "We will not let you sleep," or surrounding individuals on the street to scream insults. All right, let's pause here. We'll dive into it, then we'll keep going. The gist of his argument is, all of you pro-Palestine protesters are illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous because you're shutting down Democratic speeches, Democratic rallies, getting in the face of Democratic politicians. That's his argument. John, very simple response to that. Why is doing a protest illiberal, dangerous, and authoritarian, but committing a genocide or aiding and abetting a genocide is not illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous? The whole point of these protesters is you guys are arming and funding a genocide, and by extension, co-signing it. We are trying to stop that because it's illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous, and people are dying. Effectively, he's saying breaking civility norms is a bigger affront than the people helping to carry out an ethnic cleansing and a genocide in real time. In order for him to write this article, he has to not allow the thought in his head for a second of the true intentions of these pro-Palestine protesters. If he were to just think it through and acknowledge reality, he would come to the conclusion, whether or not I agree with these protesters, they are of the belief that the U.S. and these democratic politicians are helping to arm and fund a genocide, and they view that as such an extremely immoral and unethical move that they can't just sit back and let it happen. But instead, my guess is, his perception would be, oh, you have some disagreements with democratic politicians, and therefore you shut down their speech, and that's anti-free speech and authoritarian. Well, I could flip that right back on you, Jonathan Chait. You are trying to silence these protesters who are exercising their free speech rights, so why are you not the one who's illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous? You're saying they don't have free speech rights. You're saying the powerful democratic politicians, they should have their free speech rights, but the protesters should not have their free speech rights. I mean, literally, free protest is in the First Amendment, and you're saying, I'm against this free protest. Look, let's get to the heart of it. The heart of it is, and just say this, John, and we'll see if you do, but just say, I disagree with them. I don't think it's a genocide. I don't think it's an ethnic cleansing. I think they're blowing it out of proportion, and I'm going to disagree on the substance of the stance the protesters take. The reason he's playing hide the ball with it here is because he knows if he says that, he'll get ripped to shreds because the evidence is as high as Mount Everest. Unbelievable. All right, let's continue. Pro-Palestinian protests harassing a woman in New York following a fundraiser for President Biden. Fucking murderous, K-word, fucking die, keep it moving, bitch. All right, now let's pause. This language right here is unacceptable, right? And every reasonable person agrees to that. But this makes up a fraction of a percent of the kind of people who are at these things. They are much more likely to chant Free Palestine, or End the Genocide, or Genocide Joe, or From the River to the Sea, Palestine Will Be Free. Now, by the way, Chait and people like him in elite media would say, that is genocidal. No, that's not genocidal. That's a call for liberation and freedom. They don't mean kick all Jews out of the region. They mean let's have a one-state democratic solution, equal rights for all. That's what they mean. So, yeah, you want to take a fringe case? Of course. You can take a fringe case anywhere and then try to generalize and define the entire movement like that, but we don't need to do that. We've had, you know, people go give on-the-ground interviews to all these people at these protests, and they're very simply like, I want to stop my money from arming and funding a genocide. Jesus Christ. Now, by the way, one other point, which I didn't address before, but I should have. I wanted to address it. He makes this comparison like, what if I told you Trump supporters were trying to shut this thing down? But guess what? Switcheroo. It's not Trump supporters. It's lefties. Okay. What's the point of a given protest? You determine whether or not you are for the protest or if you agree with the protest on the merits, right? I'm in favor of everybody having the right to protest, but I can say, look, I support your right to protest, but the thing you are protesting for, I think, is stupid. So if it's a bunch of Trump supporters who are interrupting a Democratic politician's speech because they want to chant about QAnon and say that Nancy Pelosi is drinking children's blood, well, I could look at that and say, you have a right to protest, but you're also a fucking idiot and you're wrong on the substance of it. Like, the reason you're protesting matters. And to conflate Trump supporters interrupting something with lefties who are saying end to genocide, that's both sides bullshit. False equivalence bullshit to the max. By the way, If we were back during the height of the Vietnam War, would he have written the same article? Oh my God, all of these left-wing protesters who are trying to shut up these Democratic politicians who are delivering reasonable speeches. How could they? They're authoritarian. Again, what's actually authoritarian is arming and funding a massacre of innocent civilians. Napalm and Agent Orange being used on landless peasants in Vietnam, killing entire villages. If people were protesting that, my guess is Che would be like, well, yeah, I mean, in retrospect, everybody agrees the Vietnam War was horrifically immoral and shouldn't have been done, so those protesters were right. It's just he doesn't agree with them on this particular one. Anyway, the goal of these maneuvers is not to make the case for pro-Palestinian policy. That's exactly what the goal is. But to abuse and deny basic rights to those who fail to endorse the protesters' beliefs. It's to try to stop a genocide. Stop strawmanning them. And yes, being prevented from holding a planned speech to supporters, stalked on the street, or subjected to sleep denial are all forms of abuse. You know what else is abuse? Carpet bombing babies. Starving an entire population of 2.3 million people. Bombing hospitals and schools and churches and mosques and marketplaces. Funny, he's got nothing to say about those things. Almost nobody believes these are all just natural parts of the give and take of public disagreement. The most elemental premise of liberalism is that politics should be governed by a uniform set of rules or norms that apply to everybody, regardless of the content of their beliefs. Oh my God. Oh my God. You want to talk about a uniform set of rules or norms? It's Israel violating those rules and norms. It's the United States arming and funding Israel who are violating those rules and norms. And he's more outraged by some kids on a college campus protesting an incredibly powerful politician. Over the last decade, an increasingly visible fault line has opened up on the left between political liberals and more radical activists. The illiberal left defines politics as a conflict between oppressor and victim, and does not believe the former deserves the same rights as the latter. This is totally made up. I'm a leftist, and I believe in universal rights for all. So your argument's already wrong. Crucially, the special prerogatives of victimhood apply not only to victims, but also to those struggling on their behalf. Abusive protesters usually meet critiques of their illiberal methods with a facile comparison to the civil rights movement. But that movement was designed for a political environment in which basic liberal rights did not exist. Yes, this is also the point in this fight. Palestinians' rights do not exist. They're being carpet bombed into the fucking Stone Age. The fact that you can't see how that's analogous is your problem. It's not our problem. Black Americans lack the right to vote, to petition for grievances, or otherwise exert basic freedoms that white Americans enjoyed. The movement's theorists did not intend their carefully designed arguments to be a permanent license for any progressive cause to declare itself beyond the law for all time. This is unbelievable. He's making it seem like these lefties who are protesting are saying, like, let's abolish age of consent laws or something. And arguing for that on the basis of, like, it's their right if they're 12 years old to decide. This isn't what's happening. They're saying Palestinians have no human rights. There is no justice. Israel's violating international law on a daily basis. We are funding them. We are arming them. We are aiding and abetting them as they carpet bomb children. They've killed 41,000 Palestinians, and he's out there like, this is not like the civil rights movement. That was much more dire. Oh, that was super dire. You know what else is dire? Genocide. Civil rights demonstrators had been shut out of electoral politics by force since Reconstruction. The pro-Palestinian movement, by contrast, is barely even attempting democratic participation. The movement could have run an anti-Israel candidate against Biden, but never bothered, no doubt anticipating they would lose. Oh my God. Every fucking part of this is wrong. They're barely attempting democratic participation. This is the democratic participation, and you're smearing it. The democratic participation is, oh my God, we really got to stop this genocide. Let's try to force the politicians to stop the genocide by showing them we mean business, by protesting them, by making clear we mean business, and we'll do it nonviolently, but we're going to let them know we mean business. This is democratic participation, number one. Number two, we tried running people, and you guys in the media did everything you could to make sure we buried that fact. Right? Marianne Williamson ran. She was way more anti-war than RFK or Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Cornel West is running right this very second. And by the way, when we had Cenk Uygur ran, he's against this. When we had a primary, or tried to have a primary, states like Florida and North Carolina, the Democratic parties in those states said, we're just going to ban the primary and not have a primary. You want to talk about illiberal and authoritarian and anti-democratic and dangerous. Who's really doing that? It's Joe Biden. It's the DNC. It's the Democrats. What the fuck are you talking about? These pro-Palestine protesters are trying to participate democratically. And you're slamming them for it. And then you say, well, you're not even trying. This is them trying and you're against it. Jesus Christ, man. I can't deal with this. I can't deal with this. Force is not their last resort, but their preferred method. What the fuck are you talking about? It allows them to maintain the moral binary that animates them in all its purity without engaging in the unpleasant compromises necessary to win support of the majority of the country or even a party. He's talking like the pro-Palestine protesters on the substance are not agreed with. We've seen the polls. The overwhelming majority of Americans, including the majority of independents and Republicans, want a full ceasefire right now. He acts like this is some fringe-ass group of people. They are representing the silent majority, and you can't even engage by looking at a fucking poll here because you know you're wrong. I don't know how much more of this I can get through. I'm giving myself an aneurysm. Jesus Christ. Of course, large segments of the right dispensed with the guardrails of liberalism long ago. Donald Trump's breakthrough insight is to stop even pretending that Republicans have to uphold any neutral standard of fairness. The Trump movement is a giant in-joke about this, delighting in the unembarrassed hypocrisy of endlessly complaining about crimes like corruption or weaponization of government that Trump engages in nakedly himself. The illiberal left may have much less power than the illiberal right, but since this faction is demanding influence within the Democratic Party, it can no longer hide behind the notion that it's too marginal to be worth criticizing. Yeah, because that's the problem in media today. Not enough criticism of the left. The left really gets a pass, doesn't it? That old evasion, why single out a handful of college teens, is comical now that illiberal tactics are playing an important role in a presidential election. The ethics of the cause come into sharper focus if you imagine it being done by Biden haters in red MAGA hats rather than by Biden haters in keffiyehs. Guys, I'm going to reiterate this once again. This is false equivalence, both sidesist bullshit. The substance of why you're protesting matters. If a bunch of Trump supporters get there and protest a Democratic politician's speech, and their point is, January 6th should have succeeded. I wish we nailed our coup and Trump was still president. That's not a good thing to protest for. That is stupid. That is dumb. That is wrong. They're asking for something illegal, some illegal outcome. All the left-wing protesters are saying is, end the genocide. Stop sending our money, stop sending our weapons to carpet bomb babies. They're asking to uphold the law. This guy is such a fucking intellectual lightweight. Sure, they're idealistic. Plenty of Trump's followers have ideals too. If your movement's goal is to prevent those who disagree from expressing themselves, and you delight in meting out abuse and humiliation to your targets, you're showing the world you cannot be trusted with power. You guys can't be trusted with power! You're facilitating a genocide! The people protesting are against the genocide! This is amazing. Literally the entire article rests on him never steel-manning the beliefs of the people who are protesting. He has to pretend like they're just unreasonable, nefarious, nihilistic authoritarians trying to mess everything up, as opposed to looking at them for what they actually believe. It is literally one of the top five worst articles I've ever read in my life. It's unbelievable. So, by the way, in this whole piece, talking about pro-Palestine activists and how wrong and authoritarian and how bad they are, at any point, did he bring up any of this? This is what the U.S. is arming. This is what the U.S. is funding. This is what the activists are trying to stop. There's 41,496 Palestinians now dead. Of them, 37,676 are civilians. Over a 90% civilian death rate. 15,370 are children. 15,370. 9,671 are women. Hey, Jonathan Chait, does this look like an oopsie? Does this look like, well, obviously, Israel and the U.S. are by definition the good guy in all circumstances, so this, any of that is just a mistake, but we meant well, so don't criticize it. There's over 77,000 Palestinians injured. 136 journalists have been killed. That's the highest death rate for journalists in any conflict throughout human history. Of the 2.3 million people in Gaza, 2 million are now homeless. they use the word displaced here. I'm using a word that more starkly explains the reality of the situation. They are now homeless. They have nowhere to go. There's over 122,000 completely destroyed homes. Israel bombed them. Over 269,000 partially destroyed homes. 443 schools have been bombed. Over 2,000 factories. 647 mosques have been bombed. 3 churches have been bombed. 869 healthcare professionals have been attacked. 349 of them killed. 301 healthcare facilities have been attacked, including 29 hospitals, 69 clinics, and 203 ambulances. This is why they're protesting. We are arming this. We are funding this. We are providing cover for this. And Biden has the nerve to go out there and finger wag every now and then and say, I don't agree with all of this. Anyway, here's more money and weapons. The reason people are getting aggressive, they're getting angry, they're getting loud, and they're disrupting is that no other traditional paths to change policy in minds have worked. It's not like if 7 people pick up the phone and call their congressman or their senator, or the president for that matter, and say, sir, I don't agree with this. Can you please stop this? Oh, yeah, I'm right on it, Jeff. That doesn't happen. They don't listen to us, even though the polls show the overwhelming majority of Americans are against all of this bullshit. They don't listen. What other option was given to the pro-Palestine activists? How are they supposed to express their disagreement with literal genocide and ethnic cleansing? Were they supposed to write a letter? Were they supposed to come up with a song that they can sing? What were they supposed to do, Jonathan Chait? There's literally nothing they could have done. Now, of course, if anybody did violence, immediately they'd be called terrorists. Rightly so. You never do violence against civilians under any circumstances. Israel, you should learn that one. But they're not doing violence. They're doing peaceful protest. And you call them illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous. Jonathan Chait, you're illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous. You trying to cover the ass of murderous, genocidal politicians is illiberal, authoritarian, and dangerous. Final point I'll make is this. Jonathan Chait has a history of being phenomenally wrong about everything. He's what I'd call a liberal gatekeeper. You know what that means? He's the guy, I'm a liberal. I'm on the good side of history. I'm a reasonable, intellectual liberal. But what he does is he polices the left flank of the discourse. His whole existence is, all right, guys, you can go this far, but no further. You can go this far, but no further. So anybody who's to the left of me on the political spectrum, kooky, ridiculous, silly, don't pay attention to them. I'm as left as you can go. That's the role that he plays. And how has he used his platform and his voice over the years? Well, the only fact you need to know is this. He was an ardent supporter of George W. Bush's war in Iraq, an illegal and offensive war against a country that didn't attack us based on outright lies. That Saddam Hussein worked with Osama bin Laden, and then that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And he would chastise and berate the left when they would say, Bush lied and people died. That was the old left-wing saying at the time. Bush lied and people died. He would berate those people. Say, how dare you? You think our president would make something up to send us to war? That's fanciful. That's idiotic. This is his position in the discourse. He was wrong then. He's been wrong more since then. And he's never been more wrong than right now. Writes a whole article on the pro-Palestine protesters without even attempting to steelman their perspective and honestly engage with it. You want to honestly engage and disagree? Fine, I wouldn't be doing this segment. But you're not honestly engaging. You're strawmanning them. You're mocking them. You're calling them every negative word in the book. So who's really trying to shut down the discourse here? Somehow he's concerned about the free speech of the most powerful politicians in the world, as if they're struggling to get out their free speech. They're the most powerful people in the world. But he's not concerned about the free speech rights of the protesters and the activists and the people who are saying, I don't want my money going towards killing babies anymore. What a son of a bitch. What a son of a bitch. All right, y'all, this story is actually really interesting. So apparently, many of RFK Jr.'s staffers are kind of open about why they support him. And it is definitely, or at least it was, a secret hidden agenda, but now it's coming to light a little bit. So I'm going to show you the comments of one of his New York staffers, and then we'll get into how does he view what he's doing? Because I think it's an interesting question. I think it's a little different from what a lot of his staffers are doing. So this woman's name is Rita Palma, New York State Director for RFK Jr.'s campaign. So she's serious, right? Like, she's up there in the campaign. Listen to what she says.
So there's no Biden voters in the House, right? No. Okay, good. Okay. Things, I guess, will change over time because you do have to only pick one candidate at the end of the day. But the Kennedy voter and the Trump voter, the enemy, our mutual enemy is Biden. Since Biden is counting on us with Bobby in the mix, my thought is for the Republicans. See, Bobby right now, he's pulling from both sides. Right now, he's actually pulling a little bit more from Biden, which explains why the DNC is kind of ganging up on him. They have a special committee to go after independent candidates. Yeah, they say independent candidates, like non-affiliated candidates. They really mean Bobby, because Bobby's the only third party that anybody's taking seriously. So they developed a committee just to go after him and to get him off of the ballot in any way they can. Especially, it seems as though they're going after the battleground states more than the deep blue states. Bobby's moving the blues on his own. If the Republicans accepted the fact that New York, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, California, New Jersey, Connecticut, most of the Northeast is going to go blue, why wouldn't we put our vote to Bobby and at least get rid of Biden and get those 28 electoral votes in New York? The card's a little wrong. It says 26 electoral votes. Give those 28 electoral votes to Bobby rather than to Biden, thereby reducing Biden's 270. And we all know how that works, right? 270 wins the election. If you don't get to 270, if nobody gets to 270, then Congress picks the president. So who are they going to pick? Who are they going to pick if it's a Republican Congress? They'll pick Trump. So we're rid of Biden either way. Does everybody follow that? Okay.
Laying it all out there. So in other words, the reason why she joined the RFK campaign and is the New York State director is because from her perspective, she thinks, look, Trump can't win New York on his own. Trump can't win California on his own. There's a whole bunch of blue states that Trump just has absolutely no prayer, as any Republican would have no prayer of winning. And instead of like joining the Trump campaign and trying to do a long shot for a Republican to win in the state of New York for the presidency, she realizes that just from a pragmatic and practical perspective, it's never going to happen. They don't have the number. They can't do it. So in other words, the goal is, well, if I join RFK's campaign, and I try to help him as much as possible, and I try to spread the word about him as much as possible, you're going to have RFK is going to pull a decent amount from Joe Biden. You're going to get a lot of disillusioned Democrats who vote for RFK. So the whole point is, let's try to make RFK get as many votes as possible in New York. And really, it goes beyond New York. It's every state they can, to pull more votes from Biden to make it so Trump can win. And she even goes a step further where she says, you know, hey, if we can just block it to the point where nobody gets to 270 and then it goes to the Republican Congress, they'll pick Trump. So it is literally just like, it's the textbook definition of a spoiler. And she's saying that is why I'm part of this campaign, is to help Trump. That's kind of devastating. That's kind of devastating. And then look, it raises the question, well, how many of the people who work for the campaign are like her? Now, to be fair, I actually don't think it's the majority. I think most of the people who are working for the campaign, many of them are operating under the assumption that it is possible for RFK to win, right? And they want RFK to win. I think most of the people in the campaign, you take them at face value, and when they say that, they mean that. But by the same token, I say take those people at face value, be fair, right? But you also got to take this woman at face value when she says, only reason I'm doing this is because I want to help Trump get elected. Okay, I got one more for you. This is in CNN. RFK Jr. campaign official attended January 6th Stop the Steal rally and wanted favorite President Trump to serve 3 terms. So again, it's a numbers game. What percentage of the people in the campaign agree with the New York State Director, Rita Palma? What percentage of the people who are working for the campaign genuinely just want RFK to win? And then now is the bigger question. What is RFK doing this for? Like, is he running because he wants to help Trump win and serve as a spoiler, right? Or is he running because he wants to help Biden win and be a spoiler in the other direction. So what the empirical evidence shows at the moment is 100% mixed. It's mixed. The polls show when you ask the question directly, he's actually taking more votes from Trump. That's what the polls show. But when you don't ask that question directly and just run the numbers where you have an election with Biden, Trump, and RFK, Trump ends up winning. So, in other words, in some polls, he helps Trump more. In some polls, he helps Biden more. It's sort of a mix. Now, what do I think RFK's intent is in running? I honestly think he thinks he has a chance to win. I really do believe that. And here's the thing. If he wanted to act as a spoiler for Biden, so in other words, if he wanted to help Trump, he would be saying way more left-wing things. He would be focusing on his more Democratic positions, right? He'd be focusing more on the things that would get lefties and, you know, independents and liberals riled up to be on his side. But he doesn't. I think it's fair to say the majority of his rhetoric is way more right-wing coded than left-wing coded. The things he cares about the most, the stuff he talks about the most, right, is more stuff that the right can sort of latch onto, like the anti-vaccine stuff, for example. You know, he talks about that a lot, even though he pretends like he doesn't talk about that a lot. He does a lot of the, like, hey, don't send any more money to Ukraine. Well, according to the polling, Democrats are more in favor of sending money to Ukraine than the Republican base is. So a lot of the, most of the stuff he says is right-wing coded. So in theory, he should actually take more from Trump. But the flip side of that is his last name is Kennedy, and Kennedy is Democratic royalty. And how many people are going to get in the voting booth and they know fucking dick about RFK? And they're like, I don't know, he's a Kennedy, I'll vote for him, right? So here's the sad reality, and it's a messy reality, it's a complex reality, but anybody who's not admitting this to you is not telling the truth. Nobody knows how his campaign is going to impact the race, right? Nobody knows. But I do think he thinks he can win, and I do think he's wrong in thinking that. He is going to absolutely, colossally struggle to get on all the ballots. He's going to massively struggle. In fact, I mean, write it in stone, you'll have Jill Stein of the Green Party will be on the most ballots as a third-party candidate, or if there is a Libertarian running, which I think there will be, the Libertarian or the Green Party will be on the most ballots of any third-party candidate. I think RFK is going to struggle colossally to get on the ballots. I think Cornel West is going to struggle even more than RFK to get on the ballots. And he might get on some ballots, but will he get on all the ballots? It's a really hard thing to get. So I think he'll. I think he thinks he can win. I think he's deluded himself into that. But functionally, in reality, depending on how many votes he gets, he actually could serve as either helping Trump or helping Biden. So, but it certainly is noteworthy, isn't it, that a lot of the people who are working for his campaign are very clear-eyed about why they're involved in it. And it really just boils down to, I want Trump to win. This is the best path, I think, to help Trump win is by serving this third-party candidate and just taking votes in blue states away from Biden. Very interesting. Very interesting. Tucker Carlson had a bunch of right-wingers come after him recently because he did an interview here with this this priest who, I don't know anything about this guy's backstory, but they're discussing Israel and relative to right-wing perspectives, this is rather edgy for that group of people. So they're talking about Israel. Here's what they say.
If you wake up in the morning and decide that your Christian faith requires you to support a foreign government blowing up churches and killing Christians, I think you've lost the thread.
He's saying if your Christian faith leads you to support Israel as they're killing civilians, blowing up churches, and killing Christians, I think you're crazy. Like, I think you're wrong. Interesting. Interesting. Look, there is a difference in, like, the right-wing posture towards Israel and the left-wing posture towards Israel. So there's many on the right, a lot of neocons who just flat out, it's ride or die for Israel. So there's that. But then you also have some anti-Israel far right-wingers like Nick Fuentes, who it genuinely stems from like anti-Semitism, so why he hates Israel, just because he hates Jews. And he's very clear about that fact. He's very open about that fact. He's like pro-Hitler. So that's not even, it's not really controversial to say that that's where it stems from for him. But then there's also like the paleo conservatives or like the isolationist conservatives on the right. And those are the types who they make an argument simply on the basis of like, no, I mean America first. I don't think we should be the world police. And it's more about like we're sending money to them and we could use that here. And so I don't like they shouldn't be getting our money, basically. So it's more of like a pragmatic, we could use those funds here, than it is like a moral claim, right? But Tucker's making a moral claim here about they're killing. Why would you support them when they're bombing churches and killing Christians? Yeah, it's true. They've killed, they've bombed three churches, right? But I just want to, I can't help myself here. I have to bring this up. Look, right here. Three churches they bombed. They bombed 647 mosques. And weird, he brings up how the Christians are being bombed. He's not really bringing up how the Muslims are being bombed as well. That the overwhelming majority of the civilians being killed are Muslim. So it's a very Tuckerish posture, right? It's like, yeah, I'm going to be skeptical of Israel, but also let me cloak it in like, it's because I care about the Christians. Muslims, not so much. The Christians are the one. Very Tucker. But look, I'll take it over the standard, you know, Ben Shapiro position of like, shut up and send Israel all the money.
A message for Christian leaders in the United States, whether in government or in churches or just citizens who care about the religion and their fellow Christians, what would it be?
It would be to remind them that when the state of Israel was created, it was not created on an empty land. It was created on a land that had millions of indigenous Palestinians there, including Palestinian Christians. And that state they support, that state they celebrated as a fulfillment of prophecy and a sign of God's state to the Jewish people for it to become a state. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, including Palestinian Christians were forced to leave and have never returned.
Everything so far is 100% correct. But just notice, again, it's framed from the perspective of like, it's because we care about the Christians in particular, the Christians. You should care about all of them. The Christians, the Muslims, everybody that's there. And of course, the majority are Muslims. Anyway, everything's correct so far, though.
Churches were closed. A friend of mine did a research and counted more than 30 churches that were closed when Israel was created because Palestinians were expelled from the land. Our numbers continue to be in decline. So we're pleading that come and listen, come and talk to us. And my message to Christian leaders right now is there is a very, very brutal war taking place in Gaza, a war that I've described using the word genocide because it's a war that has used even starvation as a mean.
Not gonna lie, it's kind of wild that Tucker's having a guest here and nodding along when this dude's talking about Israel committing a genocide. Here's a question for you. Curious what you guys think. Put it in the comment section. If Tucker was still at Fox News, would this be his line on Israel? I'm very curious what you guys think of that. I'm kind of skeptical that he would still, that he would have on a guest like this or be saying these sorts of things on Fox News. I'm curious if you think he would have taken the same path, but he was already on the chopping block and that would have gotten him on the chopping block way faster. There's no doubt about that.
Fellow Christians are suffering because of that war. It's time that Christian leaders recognize that wars is not the way, whether in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya. I mean, when will we learn that war does not help? When will we take Jesus' words seriously about being peacemakers, about being merciful?
This guy's freaking it. I like this guy.
Merciful. There must be other ways. And so it would be an invitation to listen, to learn more, and to avoid very shallow and simplistic perspectives that are not based on scripture itself, but more based on political equations. And I would plea right now, and I will continue to plea that we need to stop this war in Gaza. It's killing many, many children, women, innocent lives. It has to stop. There must be other ways. And as a follower of Christ, we have to pursue the path of peace and justice, and we have to avoid simplistic polarizations, good and evil. Come and listen, come and understand what's happening. And I plead as a Christian pastor from Bethlehem, I plead that you come and listen.
Father, thank you for your thoroughly decent and sensible analysis, and I hope it's heard by Christians throughout the West. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go. And there was a lot of backlash from a lot of conservatives. The split, the like Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens split is getting bigger, but even like the Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson split is getting bigger. And this issue really is the issue. Now, again, look, on most other issues, let's keep it real. They agree. And functionally, they end up supporting the same politicians, right? At the end of the day, I think Candace will still be pro-Trump. Tucker will still be pro-Trump. Ben Shapiro will still be pro-Trump. So it's a distinction without a difference, right? But the rhetorical differences on this are kind of interesting nonetheless. And Yeah, let's see how far he'll go. Let's see how far he'll go. And then the other thing is, you got to hope that a total Nick Fuentes turn doesn't come too, in the sense that Tucker gets more like Nick Fuentes. And it's not just like an isolationist America first, that's why I'm skeptical of Israel thing. It's more of like the satanic cabal of evil Jews who run everything. You know what I mean? Like there's a difference there, and you got to be careful. You got to be careful walking that fine line. But I'll take it from a right winger, a critical of Israel. The part that is just focused on the Christians is sort of like, it's really annoying because, like, do not care about any of the Muslims who are getting murked, and it's the overwhelming majority of them. But still, better than what you'd expect from most conservatives. Sam Harris is back in his usual flow of things. We all remember in the post 9/11 era, there was this rise of new atheism. You had people like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. And look, I'd be lying if I said I didn't agree with a lot of what they wrote. I mean, The God Illusion, I think, was a great book from Richard Dawkins. He was like the least political of them. But Christopher Hitchens, God is Not Great. I didn't like that book as much as The God Illusion, but he used to be a socialist, and then he became a pretty ardent neocon in his older years, and he was for the war in Iraq. He kind of like was defending Bush when nobody else was defending Bush. So Hitchens kind of lost his way. And Sam Harris, he was hyper-political and wrote a lot about like foreign policy stuff. Torture, of course, he wrote about, and he defended it during the war on terror in the wake of 9/11. And now he's hitting his stride again, hitting a lot of those same talking points with what's happening in Gaza at the moment. And man, it is just, it is hard to listen to. Like the stuff he's saying, the analysis is so incredibly simplistic. And I don't mean that in a positive way. It's ironic because he would accuse others of being like morally blind or morally confused. I think he is the height of moral confusion. So here he is. He's going to make quite a claim here about Hamas. And of course, the Nazis get dragged into it. Listen to this.
Overwhelming majority of people who are this confused about how to live good lives are Islamic extremists. And the worst of these are jihadists. Now, Hamas is a jihadist organization.
Right off the bat here, that's not really the full picture, is it, Sam? It's not enough to just say, well, Hamas are jihadists, full stop. Like, that is purposefully leaving out a lot of nuance and complexity and detail, right? We're clear on that, right? Like, an actual jihadist organization, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, their goal is global caliphate. That's their goal. That is not Hamas's goal. They want Palestine to be a country, and they want it to be governed by Islamic law. That's true. But they don't have global ambitions. In the same way, like, you know, like the Houthis, for example, putting them on the terror list, it was preposterous because they're not going to do terror attacks against the West because they're trying to form a global caliphate. That's not what they do. They're not like ISIS. They're not like Al-Qaeda. He's purposefully glossing over very real differences, right? But again, follow the thread here. Follow the thread, because he says, you know, Islamic extremists are morally confused, but the worst of them are jihadists. And he says, Hamas is a jihadist organization. That's what he says. Now, wait until you hear the rest.
In my view, that's all we need to know about it. The question of how it got that way.
That's hilarious, by the way. That's all we need to know. Don't look any deeper. Don't look any deeper. That's it. That's it.
Is fundamentally uninteresting, as is the question of why so many Palestinians have come to support it.
Yeah, gee, I wonder. I wonder why Palestinians would support their militant hardliners. Tough one to figure out. I'm sure it couldn't be that Palestinian babies are getting carpet bombed on a daily basis, and Israel is bombing hospitals and schools and churches and mosques and marketplaces and factories and houses and all sorts of civilian infrastructure. It couldn't be that when you get barbaric, savage, hardline, far-right policies from their enemy, that they run into the arms of their hard-right, barbaric, savage hardliners on their side. Can't be that, right? Can't be a perfectly natural reaction that everybody has. Like after 9/11, when the U.S. got attacked, and George W. Bush's approval rating was like fucking 90%. Turns out violence begets violence. Turns out hard-right politics begets hard-right politics from the other side. That's what happened. Oh my God. I haven't even gotten to the big part yet. Sorry, I'm getting way too triggered. Here, let's keep going. Follow the thread. Hamas is jihadist and...
As is the question of why so many Palestinians have come to support it. It would be like asking in 1941 how the SS became so radicalized. And why do so many millions of Germans support it? That's an interesting question now, right now that Nazism has been defeated. But in 1941, there was nothing to do but kill Nazis. I feel exactly the same way about jihadists. In fact, jihadists are worse than Nazis, in my view. They don't have the same power the Nazis had in the 30s and 40s, which is a very good thing, and we should keep it that way. But their ideology is actually worse. Jihadism is essentially Nazism plus an expectation of paradise. It's Nazism plus religious fanaticism. Nazism plus an eagerness to be martyred and to see their children martyred. There are many differences between Nazism and jihadism, of course, but they only make the Nazis look comparatively benign.
Hamas are jihadists, and jihadism makes Nazism look, what do you say, relatively benign was the phrasing? Let me hear it again.
There are many differences between Nazism and jihadism, of course, but they only make the Nazis look comparatively benign.
Comparatively benign. Nazis are comparatively benign to Hamas. Sam, do you have any thoughts on 41,496 Palestinians being killed by Israel? 37,676 of them being civilians, far over 90% civilian death rate. By the way, Hamas had a lower civilian death rate. They killed, depending on which numbers you believe, anywhere between 55% and 70% civilians. That's the ballpark. Israel has killed more civilians as a raw number and as a percentage. Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on 15,370 children being killed by Israel? Any thoughts on Israel injuring 77,000 Palestinians, killing 136 journalists, which is the most deadly conflict for journalists literally in human history? Any thoughts on Israel bombing Gaza back to the Stone Age to the point where 2 million of the 2.3 million people in Gaza are now homeless? Any thoughts on when Israel announced a medieval-style siege, which is by definition collective punishment, where they said we're cutting off food, fuel, and water and electricity to everybody in Gaza because of the actions of Hamas? How many Hamas members are there? 30,000. How many people in Gaza? 2.3 million. They said because of the actions of 30,000, we are going to starve 2.3 million. You want to make any comparisons to Nazis now? How about that comparison? Are you going to address any of these facts on the ground? The 122,500 homes that have been completely destroyed? Or the 269,700 homes that have been partially destroyed? You want to talk about that? You want to talk about 443 schools being attacked by Israel? You want to talk about the wholesale destruction of all of these schools in Gaza? Everyone, many of them, meticulously blown up in controlled demolitions. Not even a whiff of, oh, there's a Hamas command and control center in something. In all 443 schools? How about what we covered the other day? That around the Al-Shifa complex, where Israel did a massacre and killed 13 children on purpose, they were also looting and stealing from the houses around. Were they looting and stealing things like gold necklaces and things of that nature? Because that's their way of defending themselves against Hamas? 647 mosques bombed, 3 churches bombed, 869 healthcare professionals attacked, including 349 of them killed. Remember when everybody was debating that one hospital, which was the first hospital to be bombed? Was it a misfired Palestinian weapon or was it Israel? Well, here we are. 29 hospitals have been bombed later. And people like Sam are not really talking much about debating, hey, who's attacking the... What's it? Even if I grant you that first one, which I don't, 28 were bombed by Israel. You want to talk about Nazis? You want to talk about Nazis? You want to talk about comparisons to Nazism? Look, here's the difference between me and Sam. I will gladly and freely admit Hamas are terrorists. You can make a comparison between Hamas and Nazis. I think that's fair. I think anybody that targets civilians on purpose are the scum of the earth. That is the definition of terrorism. That is evil. That is immoral. That is unethical. That is wrong. Anytime anybody attacks civilians on purpose, it is wrong. Israel does that. The IDF does that even more than Hamas. So if you want to make Nazi comparisons, I'm comfy making those comparisons all day long. Yeah, Hamas are like Nazis. Israel is even more like Nazis. If you look at all this death and all this devastation, if you look at flower massacre after flower massacre, if you look at people coming out waving white flags who get gunned down and murked anyway, you look at the carpet bombing of children, and you say, it was all an accident. We thought they were all Hamas. It's gotten to the point that is so laughable, over 90% of people don't believe you. Anybody who looks honestly at the evidence, 99.9% of those people wouldn't believe you. They think you're morally blind, you're morally confused, you are phenomenally biased. That's what they think. And they're right. It's so funny, he says stuff like, moral. There's moral confusion all over the place. That defines him perfectly. Saying Nazis are comparatively benign to Hamas. That's what he said. And won't even engage on this part of it. To the extent he would, we already know. We already know everything he'd say. Is there collateral damage sometimes in war? Yeah, it's unfortunate. But the difference is they don't mean it. And Hamas does. And therefore, they're much more moral. And obviously, I mean, look at gay people are treated way better in Israel than they're treated in Gaza. So therefore, these are more enlightened Western values that they live by. Like, we've heard all these things so many over and over and over. Nobody is buying the bullshit anymore. They're just not. They're just not. If you think this isn't on purpose, I got a bridge to sell you. Because you are the most gullible motherfucker on planet Earth. They're doing it on purpose. It is a genocide. It is an ethnic cleansing. Don't take my word for it. Take their own words for it. Remember, we're the forces of light versus the forces of darkness. Remember when Benjamin Netanyahu brought up the story of Amalek? Remember when they said there are no civilians in Gaza? They're all guilty enough. They could have cooed Hamas if they want to. They didn't. So they're all guilty enough. From the day they announced the total siege punishing 2.3 million people for the actions of 30,000, they were making it crystal clear. We view you as all the same. We view you as all guilty, and we're going to treat you as such. An entire group of people, women, children, all of them. That's as Nazi-like as it gets, dude. But he's not going to engage on that. He's not. Or he'll go to the standard, you know, standard talking points, which are have the IQ of a mosquito. But here we are. So anyway, there's Sam Harris for you. Still up to his same stuff. Man, it sure does ring a hell of a lot more hollow now, given this set of facts, doesn't it? One of the big problems, not only with Ben Shapiro, but with right-wing commentators in general, is they always just massively overreach. So they'll go out, they won't only say you're wrong. They'll say, like, you're evil and nefarious, and your intentions are impure, right? And it happens all the time. Like, all of right-wing commentary is based on that. Is based on, like, how can I viciously strawman the opposition and pretend they don't even have a semblance of a point while morally grandstanding myself? And this comes through so much with Ben Shapiro, and specifically on this issue of Israel. Now, we all know this animated the Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro and Jeremy Boring so much that they parted ways with Candace Owens. She was fired. Apparently, the day before she went on air, she was like, well, you know, we'll see you guys tomorrow. The day before she was fired, she was saying, oh, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow, whatever. So clearly they fired her. And all the talk about free speech. Now all of a sudden it's the Overton window trying to limit some things are not acceptable. Okay. So now you sound like you would rip Twitter. You would rip New York Times for anti-free speech. Now you're using the same arguments. Hey, we're a publisher, not a platform. So it's okay when we do it. Anyway, here's how far gone Ben Shapiro is on this issue. Look at this. The Biden administration is now effectively preparing to make aid to Israel contingent on unspecified changes to Israeli policy, which means that Israel can do little or nothing to appease the White House. Hamas is now in control of the Biden administration. Hamas is now in control of the Biden administration. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything more wrong than this tweet. Like, it's the inception of wrongness. It's wrong within wrong within wrong within wrong. We're going layers deep on this bitch, okay? Let's surgically break it down. The Biden administration is now effectively preparing to make aid to Israel contingent on unspecified changes to Israeli policy. Hey, Ben. I'm sure you've heard this before. But the thing to look at is not words. It is actions. You would probably say yourself, I don't care what a politician is saying. I care what they're doing. Right? If the actions don't line up with the policies, then why would I put any credence in your words? I would dismiss them out of hand and just look at your record, right? If we use that frame of analysis to the point you just made, you're wrong. They're not conditioning dick to Israel. They're not. How many times have they sent them more money and more weapons after another 1,000 women and children were blown up from the sky? How many times? They keep sending money. They keep sending weapons, even immediately after Israel commits a war crime and then announces, hey, we're going to do another massive land grab, illegal land grab in the West Bank. The Biden administration goes, we don't agree with that. That's concerning. Anyway, here's more money and weapons. So right off the bat here, you're just wrong. The idea that, oh my God, they're being so stringent with their rules and regulations and restrictions against Israel. The Biden administration has now come out over a dozen times and said, we don't really agree with what Israel's doing here, and it's concerning, and, you know, hey, we believe in international law, and they should be more deliberate and cautious and specific in what they're doing, and they'll yap, they'll say that, but then Israel doesn't listen, and the U.S. keeps sending money and keeps sending weapons and keeps doing the finger-wagging public, we're not totally in agreement with this, even though we're going to keep sending money and weapons, so you're just wrong. Ben, you're just wrong. Biden has been, unfortunately, green-lighting everything to Israel behind the scenes. In fact, there were stories from a few months ago where in the private conversations, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, they'd be like, look, help us to help you, right? Help us to help you. Give us some sort of a PR win so that we can then go around and be like, see, they are following international law. They are caring about Palestinian civilians. You know, they're trying to get them to do a variety of different things to just give them a PR win so they can obfuscate and deflect and buy them more time to finish what they're doing. That's the reality, Ben. Then he goes on to say, which means Israel can do little or nothing to appease the White House. Israel is the most belligerent, over-the-top, aggressive, asshole fucking nation I've ever seen in terms of how the government acts and what the IDF is doing. And again, the U.S. is still funding and arming them, so they can do whatever they want. They get away with it. And he says, Hamas is now in control of the Biden administration. That's right. Joe Biden, the guy who called himself a proud Zionist since like the fucking 1970s, he's been saying that. The guy who repeatedly says, if it wasn't for Israel, there wouldn't be a Jew safe in the world. The guy who has countless times sent more money and more weapon and provided cover for Israel. Joe Biden is Hamas now. Look, what this goes to show you, it's actually a very simple takeaway. What this goes to show you is you're not allowed to break with Israel even just to virtue signal or give rhetoric that I don't really like carpet bombing children. You're not even allowed to do that without Ben Shapiro going out there and calling you. He hopped right over anti-Semite. He went deeper and worse. He went, you're Hamas. If you utter a peep of disagreement with Israel, even if you agree and allow all the horrible policies, if you have a peep of disagreement, you're either an anti-Semite or you're literally Hamas. So look, there was a time when I thought it would be unfair to say, you know, oh, Ben Shapiro, he's all about like Israel first and not America first. Now, when I look at this, how can anybody disagree with that? How can anybody disagree that he's Israel first? This has Israel first written all over it. The U.S. president is Hamas because he 100% greenlights everything Israel does, but sometimes says, please don't do that. He's Hamas. So nobody can disagree with Israel in any way, shape, or form or want to cut off our money and our weapons. He feels like Israel is entitled to my tax money and your tax money. And weapons. He feels Israel is entitled to that. And if you disagree, you're an anti-Semite or you're Hamas. Ben, nobody is buying your absolutely idiotic horseshit. You look like a fucking idiot. You look like an idiot. And as we just talked about with Sam Harris, you guys tell me, how many breakdowns has Ben Shapiro done of his numbers here? I'm just curious. 41,496 dead Palestinians, of which 37,600 are civilians, over 15,000 kids, over 9,000 women. How many segments has he done on this? How many segments has he done on the 2 million homeless Palestinians whose homes got bombed by Israel, even though they're civilians, they didn't do anything wrong? How many segments has he done on the 349 healthcare workers who Israel killed, murdered? How about the 136 journalists? How many segments has he done expressing concern? Oh my, yeah, maybe they went too far. Maybe. We all know the answer to that question. He just pretends like these things don't exist and insists that Israel is moral and just and righteous and the Palestinians are evil, murderous, anti-Semites. And even Joe Biden is Hamas. Why? Because he dares to, as he greenlights everything Israel does, he dares to publicly say, hey, can you not kill as many kids, maybe? What a joke. I honestly can't believe anybody could watch this guy and take him seriously. I just can't. I can't wrap my mind around it. It's just, is it just the fact that he talks fast and that tricks people into thinking that he's smart? Like, hey, he's a motor mouth. He must be right. No, he's an arrogant, weaselly little prick who happens to talk fast, but the substance is not there. Anyway, Joe Biden is Hamas. You learn something new every day. All right, y'all. So the Republican Civil War is still chugging along here. Marjorie Taylor Greene apparently nuked the failed completely House Republican caucus, and she regrets that January 6th wasn't successful. Okay, that's dark. We'll get back to that. This is in Mediaite. Marjorie Taylor Greene spoke in Tunnel Hill, Georgia on Monday night and dropped a series of rhetorical bombs, which were quickly picked up on by both Democrats and political journalists. Greene pulled no punches in attacking House Speaker Mike Johnson. She's had it out for this guy for a while now, the new speaker. And the Republican House majority she is part of, quote, a Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, brought that very bill to the floor, passed with the Democrats. He did not have a majority of Republicans, Greene fumed, regarding the $1.2 trillion spending package that passed the House last month. Greene has vowed to continue with her effort to file a motion to vacate the speakership and remove Johnson from his position. Greene slammed Johnson for how he brought the bill to the floor and noted that the GOP-led House has had its fair share of dysfunction this year. Quote, we have bitter battles with one another, she said, but I want you to know that anyone who serves in leadership in America should be prepared to battle for what is right. We should be prepared to fight it out with one another. We should be prepared to find common ground. Please, she's never found common ground in her life. We should be prepared to hold the line and do what's right, to do what our voters want us to do. But that has not happened in this Congress. As a matter of fact, our Republican majority has failed completely. Okay, so let's see. I think are there a couple? Yeah, there's a couple clips here. First, let's listen to this one.
We should be prepared to hold on and do what is right, to do what our voters sent us to do. But that has not happened this Congress. As a matter of fact, our Republican House majority has failed completely.
So that's pretty scathing. And then here's the January 6th comment.
If I had it my way, we would have impeached him a long time ago.
That never would have fucking, like, it's not possible for that to work. You don't have the numbers. So you just impeach him through the House. If you're lucky, it'll get through the House. It probably won't. They don't have the numbers really to do it. But let's just say it does for argument's sake. It dies in the Senate immediately, and then Joe Biden gets a round of positive headlines about how he's Teflon and he survived the impeachment thing, just like what happened with Trump, what the Democrats did with Trump. Like, anyway, that's not even the big part of it.
Actually, if I had it my way, we would have been successful in our objection on January 6th, and he wouldn't even be president. I'm getting better, though. We'll get there.
So let's think about what she's actually saying here, because this is important. Her point is, I wish we succeeded on January 6th. Oh, really? Well, what would succeeding on January 6th be? Well, she just told you. Biden never becomes president. We keep Trump in there. So in other words, I wish our coup worked. I wish we successfully completed the coup and stole Joe Biden's rightful seat from him. By the way, play this for anybody who says January 6th was not a coup attempt or was not an insurrection. She is telling you, I supported it, and it was that. Because the end result that I wanted, which was the goal, was to keep Trump in there and not let Joe Biden get the seat, even though he won it. So she's saying it's a coup. She's saying it's an insurrection. This is her point. Look, I actually want to give props to her for honesty, because there's a lot of people out there who are really fucking weaselly about this. And they say, no, it wasn't a coup attempt. It wasn't an insurrection. Really? Then what were they trying to do? What was the fake elector scheme or fraudulent elector scheme? By the way, they use that terminology internally with each other. They were saying it was a fraudulent elector scheme. What was that about? Puppies and rainbows? Did they want to make it so, yeah, Biden still gets an office, but we're going to push him to the right or something? No, they wanted Trump to stay in office. Definitely a coup attempt. Definitely an insurrection. It just failed. Okay. So there's that. But then on the Mike Johnson thing, guys, I got to be honest with you. As somebody on the left, I love to see this. Why? Because of people like Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, and clearly Marjorie Taylor Greene now too. They were the ones, Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz were the ones who, you know, drove the ship in ousting McCarthy, right? And I loved it because it created chaos on the right, and it meant they had no unity, they couldn't govern, they couldn't do shit. And that precedent has now been laid. We're going to have the rogue actors, we're going to have the people who want to virtue signal and get the social media likes, you know, and they're just going to tank everything we try to do. Because we can't do any serious governing work, because anytime you do anything, they'll immediately call you a sellout and try to take you down, right? So that's what happened with McCarthy. Now we have Mike Johnson there. Now Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing to Mike Johnson what Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz did to McCarthy. She's like, I will now play the role of the Matt Gaetz or the Lauren Boebert, because she was pro-McCarthy, and since McCarthy's been ousted, she's been bitter. And so now it's like she's filed a number of times to try to get Mike Johnson kicked out of there as a speaker. And it's the same arguments that were made effectively by Gaetz the last time around for McCarthy. He's a sellout. He's selling us out. He's not doing the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. That's the argument. And it's like, oh my God, there was a bill that he worked with the Democrats. He's the Speaker of the House. By definition, he has to work with the Democrats. You have a fucking like one seat majority. You have to work with it. And then you got the Senate, which is Democratic. You got the presidency, which is Democratic. You do realize it's not possible to not work with Democrats on this, right? Just don't, the basic governance shit, just any of it is just like, no, I'm against it. Okay, well, again, I love it. Because what does that show? They're going to be at each other's throats fucking now until forever. They can't get shit done. And all they have is social media and virtue signaling. And rile up the morons to be like, yeah, you go get it, Marjorie. You're one of the good ones. Okay, let me know how that goes. It ain't going to work out well. But the Republican Civil War clearly heating up even more. I wonder, eventually, if this attempt to take down Mike Johnson will work. But yeah, those January 6th comments, man. They're letting you know who they are and what they believe in. Take them at their word. So the Biden team released a new ad here that I wanted to play for you. And I got to be honest. This is probably the single hardest hitting Democratic ad I've ever seen. This is brutal. This is like, I did not think Democrats had this in them, because they suck at fighting. You know what they do. It's the whole like, we love our Republican friends. Let's hold hands and sing Kumbaya and bipartisanly vote for more war and tax cuts. That's how they are normally. But I think since Biden's poll numbers have been so low for so long, he was really left with no choice but to like, okay, at the very least, I got to start throwing some fucking haymakers here. And they threw a haymaker. That's for damn sure. So here's the new ad. Remember, this is coming out about the same time that Trump just did his little abortion speech. And he's like bragging about overturning Roe versus Wade, even though he's saying, I want to leave it to the states. But like, yeah, I overturned Roe versus Wade. Give me credit for that. You have what happened in Arizona. The Supreme Court of Arizona upheld an 1864 anti-abortion law, which doesn't even make exceptions for rape and incest. The law was passed before Arizona was a state. It became a state in like 1912. This is from 1864. So all over the place, 14 different Republican states, super extreme abortion politics. this has deep ramifications. And this is one of the key weaknesses of Republicans. This, along with just the extremism. Trump is viewed as extreme by the majority, and so that hurts them. The election denialism, but abortion really is a key weakness. So the Democrats released this ad.
This is one of our willow boxes. This is just filled with some of the things that we had started gathering for her while I was pregnant.
Yep.
There's her little baby book.
After 18 weeks, Amanda's water broke and she had a miscarriage.
Gonna maybe wear home.
It says, because Donald Trump killed Roe v. Wade, Amanda was denied standard medical care to prevent infection and abortion.
Hospital. All of these.
Doctors were forced to send her home.
This is... the blanket that she was in.
3 days later, Amanda was in the ICU with sepsis. She almost died twice because she was denied a necessary medical abortion.
And these are her little footprints.
The infection caused so much damage, Amanda may never get pregnant again. Trump did this, it says.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Ooh, man. That was brutal, man. That was brutal. Look, is it fair? Yeah, it's fair. And it's laid out very clear. You see the connections from point A to B to C. Trump got the justices on the Supreme Court who overturned Roe versus Wade. He said he was going to do that. He did do that. Roe versus Wade was overturned. And then you get this nightmare scenario. She needs an abortion for medical reasons. They don't give her an abortion because they can't. Then as a direct result of that, loses the baby, right? Gets sepsis twice and almost dies. And now might never be able to have a baby ever again because of the damage that was done by not getting the abortion. What part of this is factually wrong? From the Democrat perspective or from Joe Biden's perspective. It's not. There's nothing about this. It's all 100% correct. And all this pain and all this hurt and this fact that she may never be able to have a baby, even though she wanted, you could pin that directly on the abortion policies in these red states brought about because Roe v. Wade was overturned. They should run this ad fucking everywhere. Because again, abortion is such a big weakness for them. For the Republic, it's such a big weakness. And look at the material harm it's doing. Their policies lead to material harm. Clobber them over the head with it. Now, this is how you run a campaign, right? I guess the best comparison I could think of is when, remember when Obama released that ad in 2012? Excuse me, 2012 when he was running against Mitt Romney. And he spoke to workers who were at some factory that Mitt Romney had a stake in, and I think they ended up outsourcing the jobs. And apparently, they had them build a stage. It's like, they must have done construction or something like that. They had them build the stage, which then Bain Capital came and announced the layoffs to them on the stage that they built, and this worker is doing it and saying, I felt like I was building my own coffin when I was building that stage. So Mitt Romney's company outsourced those jobs and added insult to injury by making them build the stage where they made the announcement that they're losing their jobs. That was a devastating ad. Devastating. And of course, Obama ended up winning in 2012. This is a devastating ad right here, man. Holy shit. So we'll see if they keep coming with this energy, but look, Republicans know this is a weakness, and they're flailing to try to fix it. There's nothing they could do. There's nothing they could do. The evangelical fundamentalist Christians want to be 100% pro-life from the moment of conception, right? Like, this is what they want. That's what they want. But then you have the overwhelming majority of the country is pro-choice. There's no way to balance this where you're not losing. It's just the Democrats just have the more popular position. Full stop. So good luck with that. This is the Democrats hammering away on that weakness, and it's something that has the potential to really work. All right, guys, that's the show. You know the drill, all the standard things. I love you very much. Click that bell icon, click the sub button, click the like button, leave a comment, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Check out the show, audio version, podcast style, if you're so inclined, or you could keep watching these glorious videos here on YouTube and see this disastrous mug that I have here for you. And that's it. I love you guys. We got Medea Benjamin on the show on Crystal Kyle and Friends. Definitely check that out. She's a hero in the anti-war game. Really interested to talk to her. And I'll talk to you all soon. Have a great rest of your day.